on the agenda is regulations. So we have 5 regulations from the professional standards boards in front of us. So 3 are for action, 2 are information. I see her on the screen. So hello, Dr. Linnea Bradshaw, executive director for the professional standards boards to prevent information on the regulations. I think that we also have, I don't see her, but Dr. Lauren Conrad, she is the education associate for visual and performing arts. Ah, there we go. I see another face. So thank you both for joining us tonight. As you know, those that are up for action have been in front of us before, but this is an opportunity to have any additional questions. So the first one in front of us is Regulation 1558, Theater Teacher for Action. So with that, Dr. Bradshaw, did you want to say anything, or we can open it up to the floor, as this has been in front of us already?
I do. I've been asked to talk a little bit about the history of these regulations. Thank you, and welcome to Dr. Holodick. First, I'd like to recap that the board has just 3 of the 4 arts regulations before it tonight, and they most recently came before the board for action in November of 2019, at which time they were voted down. The board was concerned about the provision that a teacher who is already certified in another area complete an extra 15 credits in the new area to become certified, rather than just complete the praxis. And while it was not entirely unreasonable, it was in conflict with certification practices in other curricular areas. And at the time, the board was concerned that passing the regulations may set a precedent that would lead to the same requirement in all areas. And these proposed regulations do not contain those requirements. So first we have theater teacher. And as I presented last month, the most substantive change in this regulation is the change in title. The pathways to initial certification, as well as the required praxis, remain the same. Additional certification only requires a praxis exam. And this regulation received no comments during its publication period in January. Are there any questions about theater teacher?
Okay, if there are no questions or comments, I'm going to take that silent as no questions or comments. Is there a motion to approve as currently presented Regulation 1558, theater teacher, as presented?
This is Wally Rushton, so moved.
Lo Fink, second. I was muted.
I was wondering, was I muted and no one heard me? Thank you. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Brittingham.
Yes.
Spiker.
Yes.
Mr. Lo Fink.
Yes.
Dr. Noble.
Yes.
Reverend Powell.
Yes.
Mr. Rushton.
Yes.
Sweeney.
Yes. Motion carries. So next is Regulation 1560, art teacher.
This regulation also has a name change from art teacher to visual arts teacher. This is simply to distinguish it from performing arts, and should there be any other art certification that is added in the future. It does not contain any changes or requirements of practice. It was published during the month of January and received no comments.
Are there any questions or comments from board members? Okay. I see Dr. Noble's hand.
Yeah, I just have a question, and I think it really applies to all 3 of these, and I'm not sure when to ask this, but in the definition section under section 2, where you have the term educator, is that definition consistent across all the educator certification areas that sees?
Yes, and I also believe that it is found in code.
Okay. All right. And then I have one other just general question across all of them.
Okay.
I noticed in these 3 regulations, there are minimum scores that are set for applicants on the praxis assessment.
Yes.
Does PSB ever look at whether there's differential impacts of those scores on different groups of teacher candidates? Have you ever looked at that?
We have looked at that, and we are in the preliminary process of creating some type of flexibility metric for praxis, such as found in many states. Mm-hmm. We've had some discussions at the board level. I am also continue to meet with a group to try to create a framework for that plan. We have looked at that, and there are disparate impacts among mm-hmm. different populations of people. That's and I think that's true across the board for all practice exams. And that isn't particularly, it's not a new issue.
Right. So when you get to the point where you have more information about the flexibility metric, would you please present that to us? I think
I absolutely will present it to you. It's just not ready for it.
Yeah.
It is still in very rough draft form, and we need to go through some process. And I know that Dr. Holodick has not seen it yet, so this is probably all news to him. So,
okay.
So it needs to go through the DOE process first as well.
Right. Well, I just think that, we've talked as a board a lot about, issues related to equity, and I think this whole area of certification, we need to be sensitized to, are we approving regulations that are having disparate impact on different kinds of groups? So I'm glad that PSB is dealing with it. Thank you.
Great. Any other questions before we put a motion on the table?
This is Reverend Powell. I just had a question about the name change from art teacher to is that visual arts teacher?
Yes.
What was the impetus that drove that name change? Is that just technology? Is that where we're moving into? What was the impetus of changing it?
I do believe that there is some, or has been, and Lauren, if you can help me on this, if you have any insight on this one, because I know you are the art expert, but there is some confusion as to whether art is art, and art is performing arts and visual arts, and whether it is one thing or whether it is some different things. And so this actually was a change that was advocated by Deb Hansen when she was here. She retired in 2020, I believe. And to really distinguish the arts. Lauren, do you have any other comments to add?
No, I think that was great. Thank you. And thank you, everyone. Good evening. There are multiple arts disciplines at this time that have art in their name. So I think it's primarily just to give better specificity to visual art as opposed to media art, which is also an up and coming arts discipline where we have teachers employed in the state of Delaware. So I think it's just to be more specific for each individual arts discipline.
Okay. Further, Reverend Powell, was that sufficient?
No, information for edification.
Okay, great, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay, if there are no, I'm taking that silence for no further questions or comments. So is there a motion on the table to approve as currently presented Regulation 1560 art teacher?
Lo Fink, so moved.
Reverend Powell, second.
Ms. Honor, if you could call the roll.
Mr. Brittingham.
Yes.
Ms. Pfeiffer.
Yes.
Mr. Lofink.
Yes.
Dr. Noble.
Yes.
Reverend Powell.
Yes.
Mr. Rushton.
Yes.
Sweeney.
Yes, the motion carries. The last one on the agenda for action is Regulation 1563, music teacher.
And this regulation does not contain any changes that would change requirements or practice. It was published during the month of January and received no comments.
Any questions or comments on this one? Okay. Is there a motion to approve as currently presented Regulation 1563, Music Teacher.
Lo Fink, so moved.
Audrey Noble, second.
Jenna, if you could call the roll.
Mr. Brittingham.
Yes.
Ms. Pfeiffer.
Yes.
Mr. Lo Fink.
Yes.
Dr. Noble.
Yes.
Reverend Powell.
Yes.
Mr. Rushton.
Yes.
Ms. Sweeney.
Yes, the motion carries. Thank you very much. Next, we have two on our agenda. These are for information. So the first is Regulation 1511, Issuance and Renewal of a Continuing License.
Thank you. This regulation has received a complete rewrite. You may notice that it is completely struck out and after Sections 1 and 2. And Section 3 starts after many, many pages. Although there is actually not that much that has changed regarding the requirements. The most substantive changes include the removal of the performance assessment requirement, the addition of language allowing a person to move to a continuing license in less than 4 years if they entered the state with some experience or they had experience under a previous initial license, and then also the deletion of outdated language regarding professional certificates issued prior to 2002. I worked intensely with licensure and certification over a period of months to look at each section to make sure it reflected the clarity for all stakeholders for the issuance and renewal process. and in each section, we worked extensively on each section. PDAC and PSB weighed in on the chart in Section 10.0 regarding options for professional development that can qualify for renewal clock hours. And then I also did create a graphic organizer that I used to walk the PSB through the changes. I believe you also have that on the board.
Yeah.
I'm going to open it up to the board for questions. Audrey, Dr. Noble.
Yeah, I'd like to first thank you for the graphic organizer. That's very helpful. Instead of trying to figure out all the scratch outs and everything. But, you know, I wanted just to ask you a specific question about Section 8, and I know this comes up in other regulations, but I'm just not clear about it, where it talks about the Secretary of Ed review. But what would be an example of when that might happen? You know, it says that that a district or a charter school could ask the secretary to review. When would that, I'm not clear about
I believe that the vast majority currently, the vast majority of Secretary of Education reviews are for things that are for actually third year, currently for third year renewals for people who are in the ARTC program. And that is many of them. We're actually revising, we're currently revising the emergency certification regulation that's in the internal process right now. And we're gonna have them be that way for 3 years because people do have 3 years to complete the ARTC programs. And mm-hmm. so it shouldn't have to, you know, be a process for that. Generally speaking, it can be things like, for example, you have an administrator who comes in from out of state, comes in from a state where, and we actually have taken care of this in regulation as well, but this used to happen a lot, is that maybe Pennsylvania requires people to have 3 years of teaching before they become an administrator. Well, you have an administrator with, you know, 10 years of experience who comes to Delaware as an administrator, but then they're not allowed to become a superintendent because you need 5 years of teaching experience. And so sec ed reviews are mostly generally reserved for people who have gotten into a bind where they cannot under traditional ways become certified because of something that happened. They're not usually granted in situations where one could offer an emergency certification to somebody and they can actually complete a program.
Mm-hmm.
That's not usually what that is for. It's usually for certain circumstances. We've had, I think, some people with foreign credentials that mm-hmm. are difficult to fit into the box of what it is that Delaware requires. A lot of times these are out of state folks who do have experience, but not just the right type, if that makes sense.
Right. So if I'm understanding this clear, it's a two-step process. Either a superintendent or a charter school head of school has to make the decision to move it forward to the Secretary of Ed, and then the decision's made at that level, right?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. You know, I bring this concern up because we have a significant number of our charter school heads of schools who are not certified administrators. Matter of fact, I think as far as those who are considered principals, it's about half. And I was just wondering about how often these uncertified administrators are making recommendations to certify teachers. And I just saw that as potentially problematic. But in your description, what you're talking about is really unique cases. And it would seem to me that the Secretary of Ed would catch things that people were trying to come through that shouldn't be prevented.
I think the process is fairly robust with people within the licensure and certification team, as well as Ed support team, at really looking at people's situations and helping to recommend a course of action to the secretary.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that.
Wendy, did you have a question?
Yeah. Hi, Dr. Bradshaw. Thank you for presenting 1511. So I look at this regulation deeply as a cog in the system, because I am a teacher in the state of Delaware and I have a continuing license. And I was looking at the clock hours, the 90 clock hours, and there's a lot of flexibility around the topics that the 90 clock hours can be related to: a personal success plan, a district success plan, curriculum, instruction, assessment, school climate, et cetera. And they can be in state or out of state. And I just wonder if that flexibility couldn't at times create downstream equity impacts without even realizing it. So if we have educators that are in certain, demanding roles that are varying around the state, and their students could use more of the whole child support versus a focus on curriculum or assessment, is there a tool or a way that educators can look at their clock hours and see where they've been focusing their hours? Or is there a way to say, educators going through the system every 5 years, we need you to really put your foot in each of these buckets over time in order to create the whole teacher, if you will. So I just wonder about that. And again, I always try and think about how, looking at the system, stepping back, how is that filtering downstream? And I wonder if there were any thoughts around that.
Well, I mean, it is a very difficult question because there is a lot of flexibility. And generally speaking, the answer to that is that the state generally leaves it up to districts to provide professional development that they choose, districts and schools that they choose for their teachers, as well as teachers can choose their own professional development. But there is no particular safeguard in this area that can say that from the state, as far as your 90 clock hours, we need you to have all of these different buckets. I do believe that it is possible. In the past, they had a type of bucket system where you needed certain amount of clock hours from something and other clock hours from another place. And the system was unworkable at the time. And I believe in 2006, they removed some of those pieces. And so currently we do have caps on some of the areas. For example, areas that are not really countable, where people could claim all 90 hours if should they so choose, so that you have to do more than one type of thing. But generally speaking, most of that professional development will come through the district. And there are, of course, required professional development, that, as you know.
Yes.
Required non-academic professional development that people are required to do each year. And that's kind of a separate issue, mandated through code and not part of, I mean, you do get clock hours for them, but they're not part of a bucket system per se.
Right. Sorry for my fancy word of bucket system, but that's just what kids.
No, I know, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. So those are the state required trainings, and I have to do them every 3 years. I'm so familiar with all this because I live in this system.
Right.
I wonder if, you know, with technological advances, you mentioned in 2006 trying to code things and that wasn't manageable at the time. Here we are in 2021. Could there be just a simple way to classify the offerings? I think if I look into PDMS and I say, okay, I've got to do 12 hours this year, there are tons of courses that I may take and I can register easily and I can take them flexibly and then I can look in my transcript to see what they are. But I, you know, as a tool for even building leaders or districts to say, well, where are our people spending their time? And then kind of looking at that against achievement, you know, again, look at all the equity challenges we have with achievement by subgroups. I just think it would be an interesting project to look at. I think the need for flexibility with teachers is there because we want to feel empowered to choose our professional development. But there are times when I would like to know what I need to take, what I'm not focusing on, because it might be more interest-based. And I think there's a way, again, looking at the system, does this tie into the DPAS system, the new system? If you get notes from an observation that you need to work on this or this, how could that tie into your clock hours so that you could efficiently work on some of those things in conjunction with your clock hour requirements? So I think I'm just trying to, does that make sense?
It does make sense. And quite honestly, you know, I can't exactly predict where this is going, but with a new DTGSS system, all teachers are required to create a professional growth plan each year. And how prescriptive that growth plan is depends on where they are in their continuum of learning. And so as that system rolls out, it's entirely possible that this entire system will change. And that, for example, like New Jersey's clock hour system works entirely on a teacher's professional growth plan model, that they have to complete a certain number of clock hours each year toward their professional growth plan in order to, you know, complete their clock hours. I don't know what kind of appetite there would be out there to change the system. You know, the regulation and the chart and the renewal hours is something that goes through committee and receives comment and all of those kinds of things. And so, while I completely understand what you're saying, I don't know exactly where. I know that there's a lot of room for to do different kinds of things. I don't know if there's a will to do different kinds of things right now, but I think there's a possibility to marry those more closely in the future.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Noble, it looks like you are going to say something.
I was, but I'm trying to keep my mouth shut because the meeting's gone real long. you know, it's interesting. You're talking about the will. I mean, I've been talking with the early literacy people quite a bit over the last few months. And this was one of the areas we're specifically talking about, is trying to empower teachers to have a better understanding of where their learning needs are so that they can be better teachers of reading. And that we have this system that provides all this different support, but how do they know what they need? And this national project that I'm working with, they've been talking about, there are some states that are actually creating assessments within these professional plans that teachers are having. They're not high stakes assessments, they're informational. So the teachers can get a sense of, okay, I'm not really understand, you know, phonemic awareness. I thought I did, but I'm not really applying it in my classroom as I should be. And so then they're kind of directed towards, so this is the professional development you need. So this is kind of an interesting conversation because we've been having it focused on literacy for a while now. So, you know, I'm kind of in line with Wendy here. If there's something we could do to help kind of promote this discussion, I think then professional development could play a much bigger role in the lives of you know, helping support our teachers and help them get better, instead of it just being the number of clock hours they have to take, you know.
I'm kind of echoing that as well. And this is exactly why we have a teacher on our board, because certainly I know I'm not going to be able to ask those questions that you just did. And that's really the value. But as I think back to what Wally said as well, the point of this board is to ask questions. I mean, this is what we do. And so I think that kind of takes us back to, well, there might not be a will, but I think someone just raised something that I think is actually kind of a very valid point, certainly worth exploring. And it also does tie back to that lengthy conversation that we had earlier about teacher retention and wanting to build teachers. So I don't know, I don't have an answer. I'm just saying the more that we ask questions, the better decisions we get at the end. So I don't have an immediate takeaway, but I think those were really great points. And just because there's not necessarily a will today, doesn't mean, particularly if you're thinking about the fact that this whole thing could actually change relatively soon, if I heard that correctly. I don't know how what that time frame is, but I think I heard you say that this whole thing might change. Did I hear that? Did you say something along those lines earlier?
I don't know if it could be more closely married to the DTGSS system once the DTGSS system is up and running and we know how that works.
Okay.
That the PD that one could take is also aligned to your professional growth plan. Right now, the two systems, the 90 clock hours and, you know, what's potentially in DTGSS are not in conflict. They're just not like fully and explicitly aligned.
Okay. Thank you, actually, all three of you, because I think those were Wendy for bringing that to kind of the group, and Dr. Bradshaw for addressing those questions. Anything else that people have? I know this is just for information because this is actually going to come in front of us for a vote. So, the dialogue I think is really valuable. Are there more questions or comments on this one? And we're certainly not going to, solve or address all of Wendy's questions here tonight, but anything else that people want to ask Dr. Bradshaw while she's here? Okay, so with that, I'm going to say that let's move on to the next one, which is math teacher. What regulation is that? Actually, Dr. Bradshaw, I'm going to go ahead and give it to you. It is what? Okay. 1532, middle level math.
Middle level math teacher. if you recall, I think back in September, the board approved the secondary math teacher. Both middle level and secondary math have new praxis exams. ETS has refreshed their math suite of exams. And the proposed amendments to 1532 add that praxis, and it also better defines which classes one is allowed to teach as a middle level math teacher. Is found to be necessary because math is kind of a special case. It's the only core area in which accelerated classes that are taught in the middle school are also available for high school credit. Generally, that class is Algebra 1, which is considered a 9th grade course, but also commonly taught in 8th grade. The proposed regulations allows the teaching of Algebra 1 for high school credit the teaching of Algebra 1 for high school credit with a middle level certification, and also allows that middle level certified teacher to teach that same class in high school. Algebra 1 is a bridge course, and the Math 8 and Algebra 1 standards overlap to a very large degree. I think there is one or two standards that are in Algebra, but not in Math 8. as far as history, this regulation was first published during the month of October. It received one comment, and that comment protested the exclusion of geometry. There are some schools that accelerate 2 years and offer geometry or integrated math 2, generally a sophomore course in the 8th grade. While some districts require those geometry teachers to be high school certified, some districts have not required them to be high school certified, as the current regulation is silent on course content. And so because of the comment, the board wanted to see more data, and the regulation was withdrawn at the November meeting. However, it was passed at the December meeting after a presentation by the math team at DOE and after reviewing further data. And the data that I shared with the board, with the PSB, is attached in eBoard for you. And so I'd be happy to go through any of the data or answer any questions about it or about the exclusion of geometry. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to open it up to the board again. Okay, I'm going to take that silence as no questions right now. Again, this comes in front of us, and to the extent that someone has a question after this meeting, before it comes up, please go through Jenna and we will make sure it's addressed. So thank you very much. And at this point in time, we are going to actually have a brief update on upcoming regulations. So Ms. Honor, if you wanted to give a brief update, please.
Absolutely. You all have the list of upcoming regulations available to you, so I will not go through them in detail. I did want to let you know that I spoke with Dr. Bradshaw this week, and the Professional Standards Board will be looking at reading specialist regulation again at their upcoming February meeting. So I know that's been an ongoing conversation that we've had over the last year. I just wanted to let you know that that is coming up, and if you want to listen in, that you are welcome to. They continue to meet virtually. Happy to answer any questions on the list that you have available.
Any questions, comments for Ms. Honor? Okay, thank you. Now, this is a section for public comment on regulations, and I would say that the time set aside for this this point in the agenda is strictly for public comment on the regulations that just came in front of us. The opportunity to sign up for public comment on regulations was available via email prior to this meeting. If you did not sign up and plan to provide public comment on regulations and are logged in via the URL, please type in your name, organization, and comment topic into the chat box now. If you are only participating via phone and wish to make a verbal public comment, please log in via the meeting URL. And just as a note, the board does not respond to questions or engage in a dialogue to those that are offering comments during the board meeting. Ms. Honor, do we have anybody that signed up?
We do not have anybody signed up for public comment on regulations.
Okay, great. Thank you. And again, I will just comment that there will be a second public comment period at the end of the meeting if anybody has anything then. So next is really just running through state board business. Oh, and actually, I didn't thank Dr. Bradshaw, so thank you, as well as Dr. Conrad. I think she may still be on. But next is state board business. And so what we do in terms of for anyone that's on the call that hasn't been on one before, that we really try to make sure that we're centering the work that we do around our vision, our mission, our guiding principles. And those on the call may have actually heard we've referenced a citizen board several times as we talk. And really, it's really important that we really try to identify and revisit these themes at each meeting. This is a bit of a longer meeting. We had a great conversation with John Sheehan and Jim Simmons. So that was really exciting to hear that. I love that dialogue and thank all the board members for their participation in that. But it's also important, and Jenna, are you going to be able to pull it up on the screen that we can just have it for anyone in front? We just kind of make sure that it's there for those of us that are here that are with us online. But before I get into board business, I just wanted to take the time to actually thank and recognize Kathleen Smith. She is not here for those board members. She has really been just phenomenal in terms of working as staff to the board. While Jenna was out on maternity, I have to say, I mean, she had really big shoes to fill and she did a fantastic job. She has worked with us for 2 years. She is moving on into another role with the Department of Education. And we're just really grateful for the work that she did. So even though she isn't here tonight, I just wanted to publicly thank her because I just think she did a great job and really just appreciate her and we'll miss her. So good luck, Kathleen. So she may or may not choose to listen to this, but I've already thanked her, but I think that's important. So next thing that I wanted to do is just run through our committee and meeting reports. And our members have the opportunity to provide information, written reports, kind of events, committee meetings that they attended since the last meeting. And it really is kind of by focusing on things that are doing to forward the work and the priorities of the board. These are all posted at eBoard. So if anyone has any questions, I know several board members submitted things. People don't always submit them depending on what they've done over the course in terms of official meetings, but they can also kind of raise them here. So with that, I'm going to open it up to the floor. or to the board with respect to any questions or discussions for people that might have something. So any questions or comments for any of the board members' committee reports?
I just want to thank Wendy for stepping up to doing the work with NASB. I think it's a great group to do, and she has it in her report. She's going to be working with their advocacy for policy and action, supporting the whole child work. So I appreciate that. I'm glad that you kind of see more board members involved with NASB. I think they provide great service to states, and I'm glad to see you're going to take advantage of that and contribute to it. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Noble. I'm trying to emulate your example. And I think this is a unique opportunity for me being a member of the board. And I'm actually going to be on the conference planning committee. So I think it's an exciting opportunity. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay. We'll now move to the executive director's report. So, Ms. Otter, if you wanted to go ahead and share some highlights from your report. Again, this is shared via eBoard in advance of the meeting.
Yes, you all have my report, so I won't spend a whole lot of time going through it, but did just want to highlight a couple of things. There are a number of items that I mentioned relating to next steps for our priority on literacy. So coming out of the report that WestEd gave us back in August, revisiting those recommendations and determining where we might want to focus our time in the upcoming year. So there are some actions that I took throughout the month that you can take a look at there. But I welcome your engagement and your feedback on that ongoing, and we'll look to continue to share updates or get your feedback on where you want to focus your time in the future. But like I said, I do welcome your feedback on anything that you think would be helpful for me to move that work forward. And then the second thing that I just wanted to highlight is we did talk about charter schools quite a bit earlier in the meeting as a follow-up question to some of the things that have come up in conversation. This month, I did pull some data on a number of different things. So I did a little bit of a look back at the major modification history related to enrollment over the last few years, as well as looked at some information in the annual report and kind of just looked at the enrollment history overall. And also in Newcastle County, that data and research is available to all of you. So happy to answer any questions on that or do any additional research if that would be helpful in continuing your conversations on that front. Happy to answer any questions about those or anything else in my report.
Questions, comments?
I just wanted to mention, oh, I'm sorry, would you like to go, Dr. Noble? Thanks for providing an update on the micro-credentialing. I know that initiative is going to roll out, and I think that's an exciting, we're talking about professional development of teachers. I think that is an exciting initiative where teachers will be empowered to tackle subjects that matter to them or matter in their classroom. As we continue to just look at everything with an equity lens, as it rolls out, I really would be interested in seeing who's taking the micro-credentialing courses, what students they serve, and what are the downstream equity impacts of this program? How will it be pushed out, kind of advertised or promoted? And I just think we should keep an eye on that as well, because that, going back to Dr. Noble's point about literacy, I think the first batch of the micro-credentials will be around early literacy. And I think we just need to keep that equity eye on all these programs.
Absolutely. I will share that with the staff at the department. And I think that's something that we can continue to talk about in these meetings as we go forward.
But now that you brought that up, Wendy, one of the things you talked about in your report, was about the equity workshop for the board, and you've made some progress talking to people in different places. I'm just wondering what the board's thoughts are at this point about scheduling this workshop. You've done a lot of the, you know, groundwork about trying to, and we found a local resource at Penn, and we have different states in NASB that have gone through this with their boards. So I'm just wondering how people are feeling about like trying to get that on the schedule, and if we're interested in moving that forward at this point. Because Wendy
I am going to jump in on that, because Jenna, Sean, and I had a conversation about this just recently in terms of where we were on the process, and the decision was made that Jenna was actually still having some of those conversations, and we'd rather have it be a more well thought out, I'll say, event or dialogue versus rushing to try to get it in the next couple of weeks. And Jenna, I don't know if you want to share, because one of your resources is actually also having some dialogue with the Department of Education. So we've got some really good resources out there as well. So that is definitely something that we want to put on the agenda. But the idea is, let's do it more intentional than just try to get it in the next couple of months or meetings. So Jenna, I don't know if you want to, or actually Sean as well, because it was the three of us that had a dialogue about this relatively recently.
I agree with you, Whitney. The conversation we had, yes, we're moving forward to it. I mean, getting it done, it's just, we want to make sure we've dotted our I's, crossed our T's, and have the best resources we can have, so we have a good conversation and a learning session.
Good.
And we can open it up to the board too. I mean, this is something that I think clearly, and Wendy did a lot of work on sort of a first draft of the equity framework. I think that's really valuable. So I think we have a couple of things that we want to make sure that we are pursuing kind of on this, I would say, sort of a broad topic, but I don't want to lose track of what Wendy's work has already been done.
So I would also, I'm sorry, go ahead, Jenna.
I'd like to just share a couple takeaways. So we started talking about this last year before I went on maternity leave, and I've sort of picked it back up since I've been back. I did reach out to a number of partners to just kind of understand how they could support us in having this conversation. And I think there's kind of three or four big themes that I'm hearing from those that I reached out to. And I would appreciate your feedback just around what are the things that you would like to focus on in the couple of sessions that we might have together. So I think the first thing that we're hearing is kind of equity within systems. So how can we really take have a conversation about the board's role related to equity, and sort of broadly how we're thinking about that related to our work and the policy that you all are responsible for approving. The second piece is around data. And I think that there's two points that come up related to the conversation around data. One is that perhaps we take a step and look at data in the system overall. So look at perhaps some of the data that's on our report cards. This could be related to school discipline. It could be related to college and career readiness. It could be academic achievement. It could be access to qualified educators, right? There's a number of different things that we could look at related to equity. And so, you know, do we want to take a deep dive on a specific topic? The second thing related to data is, you know, do we want to have a broader conversation about how we use data to inform our decision making? That comes down to sort of how specific the board wants to get in having this conversation. And then the third piece that I've heard from you all that would be helpful to consider is what other state boards have done related to this. So potentially bringing in someone from NASB or specifically people from other state boards. North Carolina has done a significant work in this space. Washington, D.C. is doing some work in this space. So do we bring in a representative from their board to talk a little bit about how they've addressed this? So these are kind of the three or four big things that I've been thinking about in terms of how we could frame these conversations. But we know that we only have a very limited amount of time when we get together to talk this through. So I would appreciate your feedback on, you know, what would be most helpful, at least for the initial conversations. And then, of course, as we hold these meetings, we can decide how we want to refocus or sequence these conversations in the future.
This is Wally, just two brief points of feedback based on that recitation. I have found NASB's, sort of piggybacking on Dr. Noble's comment earlier about just engaging them in the sessions we've had a NASB representative present. I found it helped our conversation. It was more robust. So I would encourage us to strongly consider that, considering how much leadership they've had in this conversation, in this space. I think it would be helpful to us. And then secondly, I'm really selfishly fascinated by the conversation about the I may not articulate the same way you did, but essentially equity in terms of the quality of the educator, the preparation. I forget how you articulated, but essentially the point was equity in the delivery of instruction. It was something along the lines of the quality of educator and how it's, you know, available to our kids. That's at least how I heard it. So I would love to further that conversation a bit more and unpack that, because as we talked about earlier, when it comes to Wilmington schools, and the fact is there are younger, less trained teachers who are in some of the most high need schools, and how that impacts instruction. I think, you know, we can come to some conclusions, but I'd like to kind of unpack that a little bit more. So I think that's a real equity issue that I care about.
You know what I think would be valuable is to actually add this as a topic for us to have a discussion at an upcoming board meeting. So I know we used to, I feel like before COVID, and we've done some of these virtually as well, where we've, you know, just kind of had something on a weekend and just had the ability to just have sort of a broad dialogue. And I think this is one that we should, as a group, spend more time on than just, you know, kind of at the very tail end of a long meeting. I think mm-hmm. this really deserves a more thought out conversation. So certainly we can have more dialogue now as well, but I want to have a conversation as to what the board wants to achieve with this and what we think are kind of the next steps. I think having NASB involved has been really helpful. I do think that they further the dialogue amongst us, but if people want to kind of weigh in with additional comments, but one takeaway for me is that I think we need to have a kind of a broader dialogue on maybe our next meeting.
Yeah, and if I could just say, I think one of the things we could do as far as thinking about using the resources, I mean, there's been many people that I know through NASB that are other state board members around the country that have gone through this process, and maybe even just considering to help us think about what it is we really want to do, having them one of them come on and do a presentation about, like, how did we do this in Nebraska? And what were the challenges that we faced? How did we process through it? Who was involved? What was the outcome? I think just hearing people's stories about how this has played out for different boards would help us think more concretely about what it is we really want. Because I think we all kind of look at this and come at this from a different perspective, but it's important work, and maybe just hearing some people's stories. And, you know, I know we probably wouldn't have a hard time getting somebody to come and do a little 10-minute presentation on one of our board meetings. God bless you. So, you know, I just want to throw that out as an idea, as a planning idea, as to try to, you know, and I agree, we need to have it earlier in the meeting. Thank you.
I think we need to do it justice.
I just wanted to urge Shelby to get involved in the conversation. I had a conversation with Shelby earlier in the year, and equity is extremely important to her. So Shelby, please do reach out to board members to have your voice heard on this issue. And again, and that's why you're here, right? And we know that this is near and dear to your heart, so we do want to hear from you. And I think that the board, we decided, I think at our spring strategy session last year, that equity and early literacy were our priorities. So if we get around to June and we're kind of grading ourselves on our work, this is a really necessary piece, but everything that everybody has described is exactly what we need to do and the way to go about it.
100%. I was waiting to see what everyone had to say before I got involved, but I think it's really important to get maybe like older students involved in the conversation, as well as like parents and teachers of younger students who might not necessarily be able to vocalize for themselves. I think every student in our districts need to have a voice in this discussion about equity.
Good. No, thank you. And you don't always have to wait till we all say. So you can raise your hand first. It can be hard, but I am pretty confident you can do that. So I do think this is valuable, and I would like to put this on our agenda, and you're right, Wendy, because we do grade ourselves. I consider that annual report that we publish to be a report card, because we are accountable. So I'd like to be able to say that we actually did move it forward, but again, we need to move it forward intentionally. So I do think it's important, and you gave us a really good first start with the framework that you put together. And actually I did see Mark's face, Dr. Holodick, sorry. And we'll make sure that we get that in front of you, because I think that was like a couple of maybe 2 or 3 meetings ago, if I recall correctly. And it was really a framework through which we can look at regulations, really using data. And again, you're going to hear data come up a lot in this board. Again, the more information you have, the better decisions you make. So with that, I don't know if there are more questions for Jenna, but I want to make sure that we have a more thought out dialogue, and Jenna's going to come back to us with kind of more ideas. I know she's already got some great ideas, and we can kind of dig into them deeper and then make sure that we have our next steps laid out for us. So any other questions for Jenna, either with respect to equity or anything else in her executive report?
I'd like to ask you if you could tell us a little bit about your meeting with Madeline Baird, who's the head of the Early Childhood Council. Is that, I'm just not clear about what they do and how that relates to the work of the department and the Office of Early Learning. Maybe you can kind of give us more feedback about that.
Sure. I can give you a little bit of background on the Early Childhood Council and how they work with DOE, and then to share a little bit about our conversation. So Madeline is the chair of the Early Childhood Council. They are established in state code. They work really closely with the department. So you might remember last year, an early childhood strategic plan was released. That was something that was really developed, headed up by the Early Childhood Council, but in partnership with the Department of Education. They have a number of priorities that were listed out in that strategic plan, and the council actually has committees that are aligned with each of those priorities in the strategic plan to help move forward those priorities in between meetings. The council only meets about 6 times a year, but their purpose is really to bring together different stakeholders related to early childhood education. So, for example, they actually met earlier this week, and on the agenda was presentation updates from the department, both the Office of Early Learning and the Office of Child Care Licensing, as well as DHSS. So they're constantly getting updates from across the system to try to kind of give feedback and inform the continuum of early childhood education overall. They also, last month, we talked a little bit about the target compensation scale that was recently developed.
Right.
So that was something that was a joint effort by the department and the Early Childhood Council. So I would say that they are definitely continuously working together. It's just an opportunity to bring folks from different parts of the system and different parts of the continuum together to inform that work. And the conversation that I had with her was some about what the council was doing and what was going to be on their agenda for this month, but also just kind of continued conversation on literacy. This is something that tangentially is related to their strategic plan, but Madeline is also the Early Childhood Council's representative on the P20 Council, so she kind of bridges some of that work. So we did talk a little bit about early literacy and some partnership that she had with Senator Sturgeon last year to pass SB 133. So that's just kind of a little bit of background there, and some information on the council. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think the first time I got involved in early childhood education in the state, I felt that it was such a fragmented system, and there's so many moving parts. I'm sure you're finding that more you learn about it, Mark. It's just like so many different players and so many, and I try and get my head around even how it's structured was a challenge for the first 6 months of this work. And you know, it sounds like a lot of the work that they're doing with DOE is trying to align these systems, which I saw that you have a new position posted in the Office of Early Learning for something about system alignment, or it's caught the title and I thought, oh, we're starting to realize this is a whole system we have to pull together. So I was really glad to see that. I think this is going to be some critical work moving forward. And I just need to, we need to think about how the board and our agenda interfaces with and how we can support some of the things that are going on there. So thank you for that.
Dr. Noble, I appreciate that. And I too am trying to connect the dots between DOE's work directly with the Early Childhood Council. I did meet back in December with with Madeline Byard and Ed Friel to go over their strategic plan. And that was incredibly helpful. And I also met with Raina Hallam from the University of Delaware at length to try to connect all of these dots. A lot of people working incredibly hard and doing really good work, but the departments, you know, the department has a vacancy in the top position right now. And so it's a priority to get that position filled with the right person who can do exactly what we're describing. So thanks for recognizing that.
Yeah.
And bringing it up.
So what's the status of the target compensation work? Like where are we on that? Where is that going? Anybody?
I'm not sure that I can answer that question, but I can follow up and get back to you with that.
Okay. All right. Because I know that's always been, you know, that's the critical stumbling block in early childhood education, because we just don't pay people decently, you know, and how are we going to get high quality people while we pay them less than if they work at the Tanger outlets? You know, it's just problematic. So, okay. Thank you.
Yep, thank you. Any other questions or comments for Ms. Honor? Okay. Next on the agenda is legislative update and consideration. So as everyone knows, Jenna will compile for us a summary of all education-related bills that are currently proposed. And there is a spreadsheet that was attached, and it's kind of color-coded, some that are older, those that are new. And I will just make sure that kind of as a reminder to everyone, so just during legislative session that we're going to have this item on our agenda, it's really just going to give us a chance to kind of ask questions, have any discussions about these items. So with that, I know this is the first one in a little while, but does anyone have anything that they want to comment on, ask a question about? Okay, I am going to take that silence as a no. And if anybody does have any questions or comments about anything, you know, it doesn't have to be on the list that Jenna provides, but, you know, to the extent that they are, you know, hearing things and having that dialogue, you know, reach out to Jenna and we can try to get any questions addressed that might impact our role on the board. Now, the last thing on our agenda is formal public comment. And this is time that's set aside for general public comment. So just as a reminder, the board will not respond to any questions or engage in any dialogue with anyone that offers comments during this section. Opportunity to sign up for public comment was also available via email prior to the meeting. If you didn't previously sign up to provide public comment and are logged in via the URL, if you could type in your name, organization, and comment topic into the chat box. If you are only participating via phone and you wish to make verbal public comment, if you could log in via the meeting URL. Jenna, Ms. Honor, do we have anybody that has signed up for public comment?
We do have one person, Ms. Miranda Wilson.
Okay. Now we do have a time limit. Is she signed up as an organization or an individual?
I believe she signed up as an individual.
Okay, then the time limit for an individual is 2 minutes. And what we do is, and actually, I don't know if we've done one since we moved over to this platform, but we want to put up on the screen a timer. And we do ask that people be very considerate that we start at the timer when they start talking or when the individual starts talking. And when it goes off, your 2 minutes is up. And we really do adhere to this because we've had public meetings where we've had a lot of people and we want to make sure that everyone is treated exactly the same. So with that, is it going to work? Okay, so I want to make sure, and I'm sorry, can you repeat the name so I can state it?
Miranda Wilson.
Miranda Wilson. Miranda, are you on the line?
I am. Can you hear me?
Oh, we can. So when you are ready, we will start the clock for you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you to the board for giving me the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Miranda Wilson, and I'm a resident of Newark, Delaware, and the parent of 2 children. And I strongly oppose the creation of a 4th high school in Newark. My oldest son has chosen to attend Newark High next year as a 9th grader, and my younger son looks forward to Newark High in a few years. We love Newark High because of its sense of community, its excellent academics, and its diversity. All these aspects, the very things we treasure about Newark High, are in danger if we allow a fourth high school in our district. I have seen no evidence that we need another high school here in Newark, but I have seen plenty of evidence in my years here that the three high schools we already have compete fiercely for the same tax dollars. Unless there is evidence that we are currently at capacity in the schools, I see no reason to spend our finite educational resources on the creation of a fourth school. A fourth high school sets Newark up for the same fracturing of families and resources, the same inequalities and insecurities that we have seen in Wilmington and that the board heard so much about earlier tonight. I have to add, too, that after hearing tonight's discussion on impact, I am deeply concerned about the siloing described by Dr. Noble when it comes to new schools. If this board cannot or will not consider the impacts a new school has on the other schools of a community, the impact it has on teachers, students, parents, and neighborhoods, then I see no hope for a systemic approach to education. Instead, I see a process designed to work in ways that we know classrooms should not. As a teacher, I know that excluding context is counter to education. Impact always matters. And it should matter here, tonight, and in all your discussions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your comments. I know we don't usually comment on these, but I do feel the need, since this is specific to charter school, to the extent that you wanted this to be considered in any record that goes in front of us, it does need to be part of the public record. So if this is specific to a school, I would recommend that you participate in the public hearing, and you can be on record there, and you can also send it in writing. Jenna, can you make sure that I don't know the link where it goes, but can we just make sure that that is available? Because to the extent that this needs to be included in a decision and on the record, we appreciate your time here as well, but I also want to make sure you know for a specific charter school where you could make that comment.
Thank you.
And thank you for your time and listening through tonight. I appreciate that.
Sure. Thanks.
Okay. Is there anyone else that has signed up for public comment? That's a no, right?
No, okay. There's no one else.
Okay, thank you. Is there a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting?
Before the motion is made, I do want to make a comment to the board. I was not going to make this comment before, but I feel compelled to share it because it's on my spirit. And I'll try and be brief because it has been a long meeting. So much of my board service relates to my own personal story of how I got to Delaware. I came to Delaware by way of Chester, Pennsylvania, where the Chester Upland School District was abysmal. And I couldn't get a quality education in my backyard. My mother was a staunch advocate for the virtues of education. And my brother and I were straight A students in that system as a result of her commitment to education. But knowing that we weren't being serviced the way that we could for the dreams that we had, for me to be a lawyer, my brother as a physician, she made a huge sacrifice for us to be able to come to Delaware to live with my father so that we would have a shot at a better education. And my mother could not move with us. It wasn't economically viable for her to do so. And my mother, more than any professional way you describe, I describe myself as a lawyer. Someone may describe herself as an educator. She described herself as a mother. So being willing to give up her kids, so to speak, to believe in their future was a big deal. I didn't realize that as a young kid, but it saved my life. And as much as we, folks may be critical of Delaware Public Schools, the opportunities that I received as a student in the Colonial School District is where I went to and graduated from William Penn High School. It was the catalyst for many things in life. And the reason for me sharing this is because my mother was so excited about the opportunity to serve on the state board. And it's very meaningful to me to have a role in shaping public education, because it was key to me and my life. My mother passed away on December 25th of this past year, and it was COVID related, and you know, she cared deeply about public education. She cared deeply about opportunities, and it was important for me to share that with all of you because I haven't shared it. I didn't intend to share it until just now. It came over me. So hold your loved ones tight. Value what we do have. I know the system can be a lot better, but there's a lot of success stories in this education system that we have. So don't mean to prolong the meeting, and I will make the motion to adjourn so that we don't have to have any further conversation. I hope it's seconded quickly, but I felt compelled to share that.
Thank you, and I am so sorry for your loss, as I'm sure all of the board is. So I'm just very sorry.
Thank you.
I second the motion that we adjourn.
Any objections? The meeting is adjourned at 8:15. Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Good evening.
Good night.